semi-urban area of the Estero planning area. Some of the commissioners might remember we took a field trip to Los Osos, and we saw the many, many small lots, some of them 35, 40 foot wide, and they're all on septic systems. And there's been a prohibition established against septic discharges by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and there's been an intensive effort to get a wastewater treatment system built.
That's across the bay here.
See the Los Osos area here, and you can see it's fairly low lying. It's got a high groundwater level, which makes septic disposal problematic. The other related issue is that Los Osos gets its water supply from the groundwater basin. And the groundwater basin is showing high levels of nitrates from the wastewater disposal, and the wastewater treatment plant is seen as a solution not only to the wastewater problem, but to the area's water supply, because the intention is to reintroduce that treated wastewater back into the groundwater system for reuse for the community. Now, what the balance of that groundwater basin is and what its safe yield is a very difficult question, one that is, has been tried to answer for many years. The Los Osos Community Services District is coming out with a report that is going to provide us with the most recent analysis of that issue, and I think it's going to be a real important tool for us in addressing the Estero Area Plan update, which is moving forward. Commissioner Knopf.
Now, wasn't it true back in 97 that they really had some question as to the multiple sources of the nitrates?
And that the perspective was that they were attempting to lay the responsibility on the lower land-owning homeowners and septics, when in fact there were numerous sources that were contributing to that.
Yes, that's certainly right. The source of the nitrates has been in dispute, and I think most people would agree there are multiple sources to that problem.
So, and also in terms of establishing the septic process, or actually the sewer system, the folks that live higher up the hills, they were exempted. They didn't have to participate in that election, right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. The prohibition boundary is limited to the lower areas, the upper hillside areas.
It always falls downhill.
Well, and actually, the reason why I had you make that point was... because what happened is the lots up on the hill that don't have to be involved in the sewer system are the wealthier folks with bigger lots. And you have moderate working class people who are living down further who get stuck with the expensive bill of that sewer system.
I'm glad you brought up the point of the hillside development because that's certainly been a real important issue in recent years for the commission. You can see the Cabrillo Estates development up on the hillside there. And that hillside area is a sensitive habitat that supports the Moro Manzanita threatened species.
The lower areas are coastal scrub habitat that provides habitat for the endangered kangaroo rat and the threatened Moro shoulder band snail. And the Moro Manzanita is dependent on fire as a means of reproduction. And that presents a certain unique challenge in terms of managing and protecting that habitat, and also in assessing the impacts of development, because as you have development encroaching to the hillside, you also have the need to provide fire to exacerbate the impacts to the manzanita there.
We have the sand spit out here, which is important plover nesting habitat, and of course we've got the beautiful Moro Bay estuary here, which is a national estuary, and we have Mike Mukhtari, executive director for the National Estuary Program, and Chris Clark, who is president of the Bay Foundation, and they've prepared a short presentation for us on those.
It is, I promise you, short. First of all, welcome to Moro Bay. It is the first California state estuary, you know, and it is also one of only 28 national estuaries. designated that primarily because of its important ecological value and the upswelling of support from local communities here for protecting this resource. We have just completed a management plan that's been approved both by the state and by the federal government, and we're now in the implementation stage of that plan. The National Estuary Program, which I am the director of, is not a regulatory agency. It's not even a government agency. What we do is try to facilitate all the different folks that are involved in protecting and restoring this resource. And that includes government agencies at the federal, state, and local level, as well as nonprofits, businesses, and just a bunch of individuals that care about this place. Our work identified several problems that this bay is facing, and one of them, in the greater context of California, that we're just not making any more of these things anymore. You know, this is about it. We're running out of these estuaries. And the ones that we used to have, we built on. In fact, we started doing that over there. And they fill up. These estuaries, as you know, as a natural process, they tend to silt up. But since we're not making any more, it's important for us to protect this kind of resource that we have. I just brought a couple of illustrations. I know you don't have much time, and I'm not going to spend a lot of it. But if you could see this, here's the bay. We're standing right about there. So behind you, unfortunately, these eucalyptus trees block it, is the salt marsh. This is the part of the bay that even at high tide, except for the very highest tides, are out of the water. And between 1890 and 1990, that salt marsh doubled in size. And there are some estimates that this bay could fill up. And unfortunately, from this perspective, it's getting near high tide, 4:15, I think. About 2 hours, it'll be high tide. But when it's low, this looks like a big mud flat. And down in the museum, there's a question, why is it, is that mud out there? Why is it so muddy? Because it is. It's filling up with silt. And one of the most important things is trying to retard the sedimentation that's occurring there. Other problems, of course, are pollution from a variety of sources, loss of habitat, the use of fresh water for domestic purposes rather than ecological purposes, and increasingly some impacts just from everybody loving it too much. There's more and more people coming here and participating in recreation, and there's a lot of sensitive things out there that people need to be educated about. I just want to point out one project that we're particularly proud of, and this is the Churro Flats sediment trap. You probably saw this as you were coming in, whether it was pointed out to you or not, I don't know. But as you come off Highway 1 onto the South Bay Boulevard headed to the park, you pass an area near the mouth of Churro Creek, which is the larger of the two creeks that feeds the bay. And the farmers naturally had pushed the Churro Creek up against the side of this mountain over there. So that they could have more cropland. And this, of course, took away the natural floodplain that would trap sediment. And the plan was to break the levees that were holding the creek in place, to reroute the an alternate stream to stream bed to better approximate the natural shape or hydromorphology of the creek, and then allow that floodplain to come back. And this is the farm that was here. You can see perhaps here where you are the levees that were holding the creek in place against the mountain here. Here they are breached, and you can see some of the flooding that occurred as a consequence. And here's the new channel that was built. And just in about, it's been about 4 or 5 years, this area has been completely revegetated, partly because people have gone in and helped it, but largely just colonized naturally and turned into a great willows forest and wetlands out here. In fact, a portion of the site that was reserved for cropland, it's backed up so much, the flooding and the waters come in, and that these plants are so aggressive once they have their water, that even this cropland is now starting to turn into a natural wetland. So it's a great habitat. And it's a great story in terms of catching the sediment. Chris, did you want to mention something?
Just a couple. Well, go ahead and finish up. I was going to point out.
I think that's about it. I'll answer questions. I know that Chris has a brief word to say, and then Janice Peters, who's on the city council here, asked if she could talk to you for just a minute. Any questions about that stuff? Anyway, thank you very much for coming out and seeing our bay.
Here, here.
Good afternoon. Chris Clark again with the Bay Foundation. I just want to, we were going to take you up on a taller hill, but we panicked about the bus size, so we're on a shorter hill. But again, Steve pointed out the Los Osos hillsides, and of course, excellent conservation activities going on around the Los Osos Greenbelt. Behind that is the Irish Hills, and the Bay Foundation is partnered with the Nature Conservancy and the Central Coast Natural History Association, that museum, to study the 50,000 acres of the Irish Hills. We have about $20 million or so dollars that have been gathered up and are headed in that direction. It includes the Diablo Coast, of which, as I'm sure you know, I forget how much has been preserved. The conservation easement has been exacted from the power plant over the coastal terrace there. The spin, the plant, targeting the rock, the new power plant, which is going through a permitting cycle. Those stacks are going to come down and the plant will be moved over with shorter stacks. Beyond that is Darrow Bay properties that were recently purchased for conservation. That far shorelines. And then the hills in the distance, of course, are the Hearst Ranch, which is where you all are headed. So enjoy your tour.
tourist.
Yeah. Educational stuff.
Started, and we're up to about 6,000 strong to 7,000 strong seals. We do our best to educate the public about these animals and try to protect the animals as best we can, and I'm sure you'll all enjoy it, and we'll answer any questions as we go along, if that's okay. So let's move out and take a look at the seals.
Not all the same. You know, we hit a road, big bump in the road, you know you've shoot.
Do you have a lot of
Well, who are you?
Well, I'm Ben Bolden, docent for Fringe of the Elephant Seal.
Uh-huh.
And this is the Piedra Blanca's colony. And we're in the middle of the mating season right now, which occurs once a year in the January, February time frame. And our count, our numbers this year are running about on average. And last year, we had a total of about 7,200 adults in the colony. And that runs from this beach up to the lighthouse.
Now, I heard that number earlier. How many do you think are right here?
Well, our official count at the end of January was 4,600.
Right here?
Well, when I say that, that's the colony which goes up to the lighthouse.
Right, okay.
Other beaches and poles.
Uh-huh. Got a lot more than I thought.
And of course, we've got the rest of this month to go, and we still have some females that are coming in and birth.
Uh-huh.
Our wiener count is growing by the day.
Uh-huh.
The mothers have weaned them and gone back to sea.
I see some young ones moving around down there. How old are they, do you think?
They could be anywhere from 5 weeks to 7 or 8 weeks.
Uh-huh.
What happens is the mother comes in and she gives birth to the pup. Nurses that pup for about 3.5-4 weeks, and then she will wean the pup, mate with the bull, she goes back to sea, and then the weaned pup then is left here to figure things out for himself. At this point, he doesn't know how to swim, how to eat, or anything.
Huh.
So he'll be here for several weeks. Continues to mature, and at some point figures out he needs to eat or he needs to swim.
Uh-huh.
So they teach themselves how to swim and they just learn their own way. But the mother during that period is the normal pup or around 55, 65 pounds when it's born. She will nurse that pup up to about 275 pounds. And that gives them a live on that while they basically figure things out.
Right. So they grow real fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the mother and milk is about 55% butter fat. So they fatten up real quick.
And the males, where are they at in this process?
Well, they're out there.
Yeah.
You have a few, probably about 8-10% of the males actually mate. And you will see them laying out in the beach among the females. Then you will see a number of other males that are laying along the shoreline. And they're the younger or the weaker males that are essentially the losers.
Right.
They will lay out there sort of and wait, looking for an opportunity to maybe sneak in and see if they can get going. But he will get run out by the big alpha since he's seizing or what's going on.
Yeah. So how many years does it take a young one to become, to at least be in the running to be an alpha?
Oh, about 10 years.
Right.
You know, it's gotta be big and husky and
right.
Not only age, but they've gotta be well developed. So
right. Right. All right. How are you here every day? Or?
No, actually, the docents. I'm out here for a tour today, but normally our docents work 3-hour shifts. And we have 2 shifts a day, 7 days a week. So, on the average, our docents come out once a week.
You from all over the county?
We
or?
Have 3 to 4 docents per shift. Because we have this beach, we have North Beach that we cover. But we do have a lot of some docents that just really love being out here, so they will work more.
Well, it's a real good thing you're doing.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it.
We enjoy doing it. Meet a lot of nice people.
From all over the world.
All over the world.
That's right. All right.
You become quite a fool boy.
Yeah, I was here before you guys got here, and it was kind of a free-for-all.
It was kind of chaotic.
Yeah, it was. I'm glad you're here.
Well, thank you. We're
thanks, Ben.
To be here.
All right.
I had to write the last check yesterday. Well, at least the last out of the history.
we had one field trip on Wednesday afternoon, and we drove up the North Coast section through through Cambria and Cayucas. We went up to Hearst Castle, and we went down and visited the and saw the elephant seals.
So it's basically all a slow county that you guys are checking out, right?
The
coastline?
It's a part of it. There's no way to check out all of the county. It's just a part of even the coastal district of the county, but a sizable part of it.
At least you had a nice day and you weren't here last weekend when that weather.
Well, we came in while it was storming on Monday, but it cleared up. It cleared up by Wednesday. Tuesday, it didn't matter. We were in hearing all day.
Okay. You can just look at the
okay. Yeah, that's better.
I'm sure you're a pro at this. If you mess up, you can redo it.
Oh, I am. Usually, I can't even do that. So you just ask your questions. And
okay.
I'll do my best.
Ready? Yeah. First of all, go ahead. Tell me your name. Spell it for me and your title. Okay.
Sarah Wan, S-A-R-A-W-A-N, and I'm the chair of the California Coastal Commission.
And tell me, what are you guys doing out here?
Well, we've come to look at sections of the coast of San Luis Obispo County so we can get a feel for the things that we have to rule on. At some point, this particular area is going to come to us for our review and approval in terms of redevelopment plans or development plans for the harbor. And it's always good to have been to a place to be able to better understand it. Avila Beach, I don't think it has to come to us anymore. It did come to us recently. We just approved their plans. But we've been here on tour before the town was taken down, and now we're here to see what the effects of what we've done. So that's a little bit different. It's going to be interesting to see.
Why is it so important that you guys have this firsthand knowledge? You actually get out there, take a look at the land?
Yeah, it's very hard. I mean, you can do it when you're doing planning, but to just look at a two-dimensional map and then try to make decisions that affect people's lives, businesses, the environment, and not ever having seen it really, I think, hampers your ability to make a good, sound decision. And coming out and seeing a place really aids in that process.
Why is the Coastal Commission so important? I mean, you guys are trying to preserve our coastlines.
Well, the Coastal Commission is a very important body in terms of its preservation for the sake of the long-term interests of this state and the people of the state. And we were created by public initiative. The public of this state has said very clearly, repeatedly, although it only went to a vote once, but every time anything comes up, the public of this state has said, they support this commission, they support coastal protection, they want to see this coast developed in such a way that it protects and maximizes public access, public views to the ocean, and our natural resources in such a way that this state's economy in the long run will be sustainable, and in such a way that this state's people will have an opportunity to enjoy the beauty and the resources of this coast.
Now, you guys, I don't know if you gave out or what, a 360-page document, the local coastal plan?
Oh, that is, if what we did was, you're talking about the periodic review. San Luis Obispo County has what's called a certified LCP, Local Coastal Program. The Coastal Commission has a permitting authority for all developments and within the coastal zone of the state of California, until such time as a local jurisdiction has a plan, a local coastal plan, that's approved by the commission. That local coastal plan or program is similar to a general plan, but it's in the coastal zone and it requires certification by the commission. Once the commission has certified an LCP, then the local jurisdiction takes over the permitting process and things come to us only on appeal if it's inconsistent with the plan that we approved. Part of the Coastal Act requires that those local coastal programs be updated every 5 years because, as we know, things change. Our understanding of environmental issues change. The results of the decisions that have been made can create, for example, during a period of time, you get a lot of decisions, you get development patterns change. That can impact what you once thought was maybe a good plan, maybe it's not so good now. So as circumstances change, you need to update those plans. The County of San Luis Obispo hasn't updated their plan. Now, I think it's probably close to 15 years. The Coastal Act requires that it be done every 5 years. And the commission is undertaking a review of their plan. It's called a periodic review. It's supposed to happen every 5 years. It doesn't happen that often, but we are undertaking a review of the plan, the LCP, for this county. And we did this because, frankly, we got a lot of calls from local citizens who came to commission hearings about a year or so ago saying, it's time for you to look at our plan. So we said, okay, fine, we'll go ahead and we'll do it. And so that's what that was. That was a preparation of RLCP, periodic review of San Luis Obispo County. And what we did on Thursday was hold a public hearing because this was a draft. Our staff prepared, it's almost like an EIR, we prepared the draft of the plan. It's now open for public comment. We held a hearing on it with the commission here. Public comment is open until about May, I think they said May 4th. And there'll be some smaller workshops held in the local communities to get people's input on what they think the periodic review should say, and that periodic review will give guidance to the county as to how it should prepare an LCP amendment to deal with these issues.
Okay, that's it. Now, just kind of off camera.
Yes.
So it's a local coastal plan that's a 360-page document.
That's the periodic review of the plan, not the plan itself.
Okay.
That's the periodic review. Okay.
360-page document.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And basically, it's a general plan to develop and save the resources.
It's the general plan for